Hello and welcome to The Game Is About Glory. I'm your host, Steph, and joining me are Milo and Ricky. Hello, gents.
Hi, Steph.
Good evening.
Indeed. Well, yes, maybe not so good, but we understand the cheer of your term. Look, there is indeed much to discuss. And I suppose in fairness, Ricky, there's not a whole lot to smile about or be short-term cheerful right now. But at least it looks like we won't be doing the goons any favours in a fortnight's time. That might be something to smile about. But anyway, let's just get right into the last couple of games this week, shall we? Let's start this conversation with today's 4-2 defeat at Anfield to Liverpool. In a nutshell, gentlemen, what did you think of the game?
In a nutshell, I thought actually we started okay, but that was, we actually started quite positively. It looked like we'd had a re-energise ourselves. I think up to the point where probably Salah hit the bar with that cross-come shot. And then after that, it was pretty much, it was quite downhill, I thought. And I was really disappointed with the way that we just kind of made life quite easy for Liverpool. And they looked jaded themselves in recent weeks. And it was almost as though they were enjoying themselves out there, to be honest. And from that moment onwards, there wasn't much positivity at all. I mean, I think we had our usual kind of, last 20 minutes where there was a little bit of a pulse left in the corpse, I think, wasn't there, as we came back to life. But no, that was it, basically. Another game with not many redeeming features.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I'll give you some redeeming features. It wasn't as bad as Chelsea and Newcastle. So in terms of our kind of recent away performances, it was a bit better than them. I agree. I thought we started quite well. I think that the problems we've seen recently, where particularly in the front line, where we have a lot of the ball, but we're just not doing enough with it, not creating enough chances, was evident again. And when that happens, we just tend to take, a touch too many or just a bit too pensive in our play. And I think that's a really interesting contrast with Liverpool, for instance, who, when they got the ball or got the ball in dangerous positions were very, very threatening. And, look at where we are at this stage of Ange, Ange Ball, this is a really interesting comparison to make. And I just think, basically quality will out it. I think that, they're a better team than us. They're better, got better players right the way through the park. And they just did a lot more with the chances they had than we did.
Not much more to add, I wouldn't say, other than it was nice to see that the intent was there, and I think it was. Mm-hmm. And I think it met a fragility of confidence that we're in the middle of right now. I think the two things intervened very, very quickly. As you said, Ricky, I think Salah hitting the bar, it was basically the first time they'd come forward with any measure of intent, and they nearly scored. And I think somewhere that planted a seed in, it would be a natural human seed to plant, I suppose. And there are relationships that aren't quite tight. All of that business, and then it's very easy for the confidence to get rattled. So in a nutshell, I wasn't surprised by the outcome. I think I was a little surprised at how quickly we got rattled, but there was intent to play, and we're going to get into it all. And it's, for people listening, we're not trying to put a huge smile and positivity on this. There are obviously difficulties, but I think context is going to be a very important word for the next hour or so of this pod, and I think you're going to hear us applying it both to this game and the Chelsea game.
I think when we had that, say, the Salah shot off the post, we struggled to clear our lines after that, and that was, I think there were several times in the kind of next 10 minutes or so where there were similar situations where Liverpool got into a promising position, and we just either got in our way or we just couldn't get the ball away, and they just look a bit panicky when that's brittle. Happening. Yeah, and
their confidence is brittle, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the way we're meant to play, I think that's such an impact on us, because in order for this to work, you've got to be committed to it. You've got to play Steph, with kind of your strength, with kind of that bravery. You've got to be quick. You've got to be first time. If you're not doing that, then this system doesn't really work, or this style of play doesn't really work. And that's the problem at the moment. We're just a little bit too slow with everything, with not quite that amount of belief in it. We're not pressing with the same ferocity that we were earlier in the season. And I think this is where, you know, the problems are.
Yeah, belief is a key word, and it actually plays in, I think, to the next phase of conversation, which is about the personnel and the starting team selection. Bentancur came in for Richarlison. Deki moved back into the front three. We had a midfield of Saar, Bissouma, and the aforementioned Rodrigo. You know, what did you think of that as a team selection? Because I think it is obviously a very key component of everything we're talking about.
I mean, I think you look at that midfield and you think it was probably a bit flat and a bit samey. And you know, there's going to be a concern about, you know, whether we're creating enough there. Ange spoke after the game about fitness, basically. So with Richarlison dropping out of the side was because he started on Thursday against Chelsea. And you know, he's been out for a while before that. He's not in a position to play two games a week or start two games a week at the moment. So he came out. And I think it's an issue right the way through the side at the moment where, you know, we've talked quite a lot about how thin the squad is, and you know, fatigue is going to be a factor because they've played so many games. And I think that's what we're seeing quite a lot with the selections at the moment. So I was surprised. I was surprised by the lineup when I saw it.
I think, I don't know if that combo's played before, but I mean, the one thing we're kind of taking out of the team there is any kind of Deki at 10 or Maddison at 10, a creative kind of player. And we're kind of asking maybe Saar to do that, or maybe it'd be more of a combination of Bentancur and Saar share that kind of role. I don't think it's particularly suited to Saar, to be honest, but I think I imagine Saar more in a kind of a bit like, I mean, obviously at a high level, it's a bit like the way Rice plays 8 for Arsenal, mm-hmm. where you're going to give loads of energy, intercepting players and just basically being able to do everything. And I think he's got that in his locker when he's super young, so that might come down the line. But, and it was interesting. Obviously, I don't know if he's. Do you think he's leading Maddison on the bench because he's played? His form's just been not that great, and maybe other people have deserved it a bit more. Do you think that, guys?
I mean, my suspicion is that he's been carrying a knock. Or actually, my suspicion is that he never fully recovered from the injury he had around the turn of the year, and he's been playing through it. There was some suggestion that he picked up a knock against Chelsea, but you know, it's hard to argue with him being left out on current form. He's not playing particularly well, regardless of whether he's injured or not. You know, in terms of what you're saying there, Ricky, you're right. I mean, Saar was slightly more advanced, or the most advanced of the three. But him and Bentancur were swapping. But yeah, Saar was normally the more advanced of the two.
I think we clearly missed a striker of Richarlison's presence and stature. I think it was very clear we were progressing quite well for the first 10-15 minutes, and there was just no point of focus, really. Just wasn't really happening there. And I do think that midfield, I don't think we'll ever see that midfield together again unless it's utterly forced upon him, because it was completely ineffective. And this, despite the fact I thought Bissouma showed more positive intent than he has for some time, it was, you know, and look, they're all great players and they're all trying their best, but it just didn't really work, did it? I mean, I think your question about Maddison, you know, we're in the world of assumption anyway, which is always uncomfortable. We don't really know. I would suggest that, you know, Milo's, I mean, I think there's got to be some accuracy. He's got to be carrying some knocks. He got kicked from pillar to post. But I do also think there might be a little bit of, you know, sit down and really think about whether you're up for what we're doing, what we need from you, because you are such an important part and you need to get your head back into things. And his head has not seemed into it. You know, he's been very tentative on the ball in recent games. And I wonder if it was a sign. I wonder if Ange is trying to learn more about the players he has got. You know, who knows? But it certainly didn't work.
I mean, I think
we can be clear on that.
I think that, you know, whether he's carrying an injury or Ange is trying to get him to reflect on his performances, the solution to that is the same, isn't it? It's to leave him out.
Yeah.
So
no,
it's difficult. It's difficult to tell whether it's one or the other.
Actually, it's very good you made that point, because it is important. Because whatever it is, if you want this player, if this player is what you think he is and who we believe he is and who we want him to be, then he will react. He will react. And when he gets his chance, he'll be like, my God, I'm going to fucking show you. So you're absolutely right.
I mean, I think the one thing with Maddison, and from his point of view, he's going to want to be playing because he's going to want to go to the Euros. And from a Spurs point of view, him going to the Euros is the last thing we need, I think. I think he needs a summer off. He needs to be able to recuperate and you know, come back in August and commit himself July, come back and commit himself to pre-season. And the last thing we need is him going to the Euros, not probably playing much, and then not having a proper break this summer, you know, getting 2 weeks off and then back in pre-season again. Yeah. Because we need to really shut the door on this chapter of Maddison's season, you know, and get a fresh start. And, you know, from an England point of view, it's not as if England aren't, you know, well placed with players in that position at the moment. You know, it's not really necessary. Just one thing, actually, kind of on that three, I thought there were phases. So when the game was still 0-0 in the first half, I thought there were periods there where some of the interplay between the three of them was really good.
Yeah, I agree.
And it was quite crisp and the passing was good. And that's something that's been lacking a bit recently. So, yeah, I don't think it was awful. Yeah, I don't think it was awful.
I just thought it was very one-dimensional.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I think it's a fair point Milo makes here, because I think that just shows the kind of, we can start the game with the positivity recharged and it doesn't take much for it to kind of drain away. Because I thought we did some really good, quite close passing there where we would, and it wouldn't just be that typical across in front of their defence or their midfield kind of stuff. It was like we were trying to do small, light probing balls. But on the three, I think he's been trying for weeks now to sort of juggle them and try and find a good solution out of the three. And to be honest, there's not much positive evidence coming his way out of that week after week. And as you say, it just, and individually, I love quite a few of those players. I think they've got high ceilings and I think they've got a lot of talent, but it's just not, we're not kind of eking anything out of them. There's no real direction of travel with any of them, really. And I'm not, it's bizarre in a way.
I think the other thing, pre-game, I saw quite a lot of people thinking that this was going to be, it was a defensive selection. And I think the thing to remember with Ange is actually, doesn't matter who he's picking, he's going to expect them to play the same way. You know, we saw this when we had two fullbacks playing at centre-back. You know, we're seeing this with Emerson Royale, which, you know, we'll come on to in a minute. But, you know, it doesn't matter who he picks, he's still going to want them to play the same way. And whilst they might bring slightly different qualities to that, the end result should be the same.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, to maybe mitigate slightly what I was saying about the midfield not working, which, I mean, I personally still feel it was flat and didn't. And I think we're all roughly in the same agreement. There's just nuances. I think it's hard to discuss a functional or dysfunctional midfield without, you know, accounting for the forward line. You know, I mean, teams are connected, right? It's not just departments. And I have to say that forward line did not complement the midfield selection one bit. I mean, at all. It was very tough. There's no synergy at all.
And you don't necessarily need loads of creativity in the midfield three if you've got that in the final third. So, neat interplay passing, which all of those players are capable of doing, is fine if you can then give the ball to someone who can do something. And you know, there might be times where, you know, a selection like this, not necessarily this one, but, you know, with these kind of qualities, might be the right choice because of the opposition you're facing and, you know, what you want to do there. But you're right, you know, the options in the front three were just very, very flat. And I think that they were probably the big problem today because we just weren't creating chances. And, you know,
once it got to the edge of the box, it was just dying. I mean, there was nothing, was it really, wasn't it? So, I mean, let's get to and we don't like to... I know we're trying not to single out players, and I know that we're not going to get into a huge debate about who stays and who goes. That's for a squad review at the end of the season. But you can't avoid the fact that Emerson Royale had a torrid afternoon. I mean, you know, we can mitigate him out by saying he's a right back playing at left back and so on and so forth. But there are still certain things that you have to do in that role. Mm-hmm. And he just, you know, he wasn't doing them. I will venture that he was not helped once again by the fact that, you know, Brennan Johnson's having to also play on the left because of the system and the side that we started with. So he's probably getting a little less help there. I mean, our entire left side has been decimated. I mean, that's, you know, they're both, you know, he's starting players of Werner and Udogi are out. So we've got problems out there anyway, but Emerson didn't really help. Skippy came on. I thought he showed a lot of energy. I mean, do we stick with him at left back next weekend? Let's take all of those as one big question.
Yeah, I mean, just on the cover part to start with, I don't think that Ange wants the wingers covering the fullbacks particularly, not certainly in open play. So, you know, if you look at the first goal where he loses Salah behind him and... Johnson would never be there. Doesn't matter who, you know, Werner's right. starting, no, whoever's, no. you know, Sonny's starting, doesn't matter who we start out there, they're not going to be there to cover that run, because that's not how Ange sets his teams up. And it's down to Royale to be aware of where his man is. And he, you know, consistently through that game, he lost his man. He wasn't aware of it. We, you know, we can make the excuse that he's not, you know, used to playing on that side. And obviously, you know, we're down to kind of third choice there. So, you know, any team when they're down to their third choice fullback is probably going to be, you know, significantly weakened. But yeah, he had a bad afternoon, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's the last time we see him play for us. In terms of Skip, I thought, I mean, again, you've got to take into account game state when he comes on, haven't you? Which is, you know,
you do.
But yeah, I thought he looked all right. And yeah, I thought he played well. I mean, I think all of the subs made a difference in this game. I thought all of them
did,
you know, played well, and you know, there's no surprise that we picked up once they came on.
I think one of the biggest things with Royale as well today is in that position. He also clearly was out of sync with his defensive partners. I mean, that first goal is partially because he's just not looking to seeing who's stepping up and who isn't stepping up, and he's just caught. So he's caught not paying attention to his right, and he's caught not paying attention to what's going on behind him. He's just sort of in a world of not paying attention to anything, and it's, you know, it was such a soft goal, such a soft concession.
Towards the end, he looked like he didn't want to be there. He wasn't even chasing stuff, which, you know, one thing you can normally rely on with Ryder is that he'll chase stuff and he'll put in the effort.
Yeah.
But towards the end, he looked like he was checking out, I think,
sad
towards
to
the
see.
End.
Sad to see.
I mean, we've mitigated that, you know, he's a right-back playing left-back. I mean, the other thing to mitigate, he's playing against Mo Salah, who's obviously one of the best Premier League players. But some of that doesn't then excuse not just doing some basic stuff, really, as a defender. Because the one thing we've always kind of said with Royal, sometimes going forward we've complained, but we've always considered him to be a really solid defender, haven't we? Yeah. If he's a fullback, he'd be a great fullback. But he wasn't doing much great fullback work today. And just that switching off thing is inexcusable. You just need to have your... They always say it with midfielders, you just need to have your head on that swivel and just keep checking. Because as soon as that ball gets pinged, if you've not looked for 2 seconds, then you haven't got a clue where your forward is. And I think they almost had a little bit of a warning shot with that earlier on where some balls got put in. But I don't know. I think, I mean, the main thing with Emerson is I think he actually thinks he's a bit better than he actually is himself.
Yeah.
He does kind of like, he's got quite a high opinion of his thing. And sometimes that's more in attacking zones where he does his kind of like little moves and things like that. I mean, I know he's Brazilian, but he doesn't have to like, you know, doesn't have to sort of try and prove every week. But as Milo says, I think, you know, he's one that's going to go, and because I just doesn't think he fits in as backup. And, you know, I mean, it's been tragic. The left side this year has been tragic. I mean, with Udogi and Davis has gone, Sessa's gone, Solomon's gone, Perisic has gone, as in injury wise, we've just been completely decimated down that side.
I mean,
it's just so unfortunate.
He's been, in fairness to him up top here, Milo, because he's in the top right hand side of my screen. Right. I don't know where he is with you, Ricky, but he has been saying this all season about Royale. I mean, I think Ram and myself have been a little more open to giving him the chance to prove that perhaps he can be the sort of player that can play Ange's system. But I mean, look, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and it's clear that he is not going to, he's not going to make the cut here. It doesn't mean he's not a good right back. He is a very good right back, and he will do really well somewhere else. But he is going to be one of the players who I think just doesn't work here.
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking at Ange players, you've got to look for technical players right the way through the pitch. Everyone's got to be able to receive the ball, you know, cleanly with a first touch. They've all got to be able to pass the ball cleanly. And he just fails on that. But with this game, it felt a bit like some of the games towards the end of Davinson Sanchez's time with us, where it's really sad to see, you know, what's happening. It's really sad to see, you know, almost kind of being humiliated in that way in front of a, you know, stadium full of people. And, you know, that you don't bear any ill will to them. You know, you've got those players, you know, you obviously like those players, but you just know that, you know, they're the wrong player at the wrong club, and it's better off they go somewhere else. And yeah, it's just not nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, you make a great point with, I mean, by the way, if I'm not incorrect, I believe Davo is going to be in the Champions League next season. Are they near the top of the table? I think they're having a really good season, aren't they?
He's getting rave reviews over there. I haven't seen many of their games.
Which just sort of amplifies what we're saying, is that, you know, these comments are not about the individual abilities of the player. They are about whether the player fits what we're trying to do.
And I think what we was probably trying to get away with is, because obviously we had other squad work to do, which was more priority, and we was was just hoping that Royale, in exactly the same way as Davis is a solid enough option just when we get injuries. And that's, you know, and until we then move on to another window where we can move those people on. I mean, I think Davis is probably a little, he's definitely more solid and more of a kind of, you know, he's going to give you more of a 7 out of 10 performance as much as possible. He's not going to be massively exciting, but, you know, and I think both of those players were providing us with, you know, filling in the gaps for that role during this season, and then we roll the dice.
Davis never would have given Salah that much room, would he? He never would have let him get away from him like that. And
he had a terrible game at Anfield once, though, didn't he? Doing exactly that same thing. I can't. No. It might have even been against Mo Salah, I think. And it was like really bad.
We could certainly say there have been many terrible performances from individuals at Anfield. It has to be said. I mean, this is also let's have some context here as well. Let's remember, and I don't want anyone to say, "Oh, you're making excuses." I'm not making excuses. It was Liverpool. It is Anfield. And for whatever reason, reasons I don't like, actually, we do not have a great record up there. So, I mean, you know, not that we should go into a game expecting to lose, but by word, let's keep some perspective here.
It was Royal's 100th appearance for us today as well. So.
Oh, no. I think, you know, we've sort of touched on the fact that we did have plenty of the ball. We didn't do enough with it. We got hit by a far more incisive team. I think if you're both okay with this, this is the time to sort of segue the next general question, you know, into the Chelsea game, you know, which takes on a lot of the same properties. You know, it wasn't the greatest of performances. Details undoing us, you know, the set piece thing, which is people have been banging on about, you know, and so on. And we might touch on that. I don't know if we're going to. But let's, you know, where do we think the problem is? How much of this is, you know, the current form that we're suffering or not enjoying, I should say, how much can be placed at Ange's door? How much are these performance and results actually about exactly where we are in the process of rebuilding not just a team, a squad?
Is he to blame? He probably, ironically, he probably thinks himself he is, because he doesn't seem to be getting kind of the actions from the players in these games, from what he's telling them on the training pitch. And I think that's reflected in his post-match interviews. Are the players to blame, though? Well, it seems there's definitely been a sea change since that start of the season, where they seem to buy into his philosophies. And I'm sort of tempted to say that might be a kind of shackles release from the previous regimes, really, and that's why the players were, you know, excited to play that kind of football. And he's not to blame in some ways for the kind of things that then disrupted our seasons, the hurdles, you know, that we came across, and the, you know, with the suspensions and injuries. But I think he will be scratching his head a little bit. I think he's still filtering now. I think maybe there's a few more players here that he thought were kind of on board or up to scratch. And now maybe he's thinking, he's having second thoughts about them. But I don't think you can blame anyone that is very confident in their approach and their philosophy, and think they're going to get there, and they're so forthright in saying that they're going to continue on that path. I think you do need to have someone that has that strength and that mindset. And on that basis, I can't blame him for what's going on. I think he just needs to, like, we need to roll along with what he's saying.
I mean, I think it's almost entirely the second question, Steph. So I think we're paying the price for having a very thin squad. And that's, you know, obviously the rebuild wasn't going to happen in one summer. I think we all knew that. We all knew that it was going to take, you know, several windows in order to get the squad where we needed it. You know, he clearly took some gambles in terms of, you know, where we were light. But again, there's only so many new players you can integrate or, you know, be able to sign in one go. But I think beyond kind of 13 or 14 players in the squad, you know, that you're left with players there who he doesn't fancy or don't fit how he wants the team to play, don't fit that style. And I think that's causing problems. We've got, you know, kind of three key players in, you know, Son, Basuma and Sarr, who all went away to international tournaments mid-season. You know, Basuma caught malaria while he was there. You know, Sonny is carrying the weight not only of his national team, but our team as well. That's a lot for one person to carry. And I think you can, a combination of fatigue and poor form, and I think the two are probably quite closely combined, hit at the same point, and it's just having an impact. You know, saying earlier on about how we've got to be on our game, we've got to be, you know, positive, we've got to be you know, very sharp in order for this system to work. And we're not at the moment. I think that's where the problem is. So yeah, I do think that, you know, all of the fix to all of that, and this doesn't really help us in the next, you know, kind of couple of weeks, but the fix to all of that is having a stronger squad, or the solution to that, all of that is in the medium to long term. And, you know, game to game at the moment probably doesn't tell us that much about that. You know, what we need is we need two good players for every position in the squad, you know, two players who are competing with each other. We can swap in, we can rotate, and then we don't have these issues, and we're a long, long way short of that. And we're not going to fix it this summer either. It's going to take, you know, next January and next summer, I think, probably, to get to the point where we're going to need to get to. I suspect, you know, by my reckoning, you're looking at about 10 players needed to sort that out. Obviously, that will probably change with, you know, young players coming through and other players losing form or getting injured or getting old. But we'll be lucky probably to do half of that this summer. So it's going to take a while.
With the caveat that I think you've both made points that I'm in agreement with, I'm going to specifically address Ange here. You know, is he to blame? I think the only thing I could blame Ange for is he strikes me as someone who does his business behind closed doors. He strikes me as somebody who does not throw people under the bus. He strikes me as somebody who does not believe that he is obliged to explain everything he does as a manager, coach, or what his coaching staff do on the training ground. And to that end, you know, when people listen to him talk about set pieces and go on and on about, whoa, he's not, doesn't seem that bothered. I'm absolutely convinced that Ange Postecoglou and his coaches are as aware of our set piece deficiencies as anybody else. He's just not going to tell you what he's doing about them. He's not really explained anything much beyond what he requires from his players to play their football. And I think we really, the only blame I could put to him is that he's not telling everybody forensically what he is learning right now and what the realities are of our rebuild. And we've talked about it here. There are a couple of players that we talked about. And again, when we get to the squad review later in, you know, a few weeks' time, we'll specify those. We are learning that we have some great players, but they may not fit the system. And I think that that's one of the things that Ange is learning and is sorting out. And that's part of the deal. The fact that he doesn't share those to us and give the fans the blood that they want, that might be his only fault. Now, if that's a fault, I'll take it. Because dying on a hill for your principles is okay. You know,
I'd much prefer that to where we were 14 months ago, where you've got a manager who's throwing players under the bus publicly.
Absolutely.
And, you know, one of the things we've got to remember is that, you know, whilst we're saying that there's, you know, lots of players in this squad who probably don't kind of meet the standards or don't have the qualities that he's looking for, we're probably not going to be able to shift all of those this summer. No. So if he goes public with any of that criticism, and those players aren't sold, they're here next season, and then they're thinking, "Oh fuck, you know, I've got another year of this, and you know, that's just not good. That's not good for the squad. It's not good for those players. And you know, you've got to work with what you've got." And I think you're absolutely right, Steph, when you're talking about kind of set pieces. You know, do people really think that, you know, kind of around the training ground, they get in there and kind of Mile Jedinak walks in and goes, "Boss, I'm not sure if you noticed, we conceded another one from the corner this weekend." Struth, did we? You know, yeah, I didn't notice that. This could be the solution. Why didn't we notice this earlier? It's ludicrous. And you know, I think. And again, I think a lot of the criticism of, you know, I don't know, you know, individual players is kind of, is not understand, you know, the criticism about, you know, not having a plan B. Well, actually, you know, look at this Liverpool team today. This Liverpool team didn't alter the way they played because they were playing Spurs. They didn't kind of set up against us like Fulham did because that was successful, or, you know, I don't know how Newcastle did, you know, a couple of weeks ago, because that was successful. They went about and played their game, and they've earned the right to play their game. Of course, we're not in that position yet. We're still trying to get to that point. But suddenly, I don't know, I think a lot of it, this reaction is kind of, it's not the football I grew up on. I mean, this is what I don't like about a lot of the commentators, a lot of the ex-players who are commentating on it. I just don't think they understand what Ange is trying to do, or they resent it because it was different in their day. And I think that a lot of the solutions that people have in mind, a proper defensive midfielder who's going to go around and whack people, would, you know, if we can't pass out from the back, it's fuck all use to us in this system. You know, people complaining about us committing men forward. Well, you have to commit men forward in order to compress play, in order to be able to play this fast passing game to break people down. It's not working at the moment. That's blindingly obvious. But the solution to that isn't to drop down onto your own their area and play 4-4-2 and kind of grind out results. You know, you've got to persevere with this. And yeah, I think it goes back to that, you know, we're not going to learn much in the short term. It's about how we deal with this in the medium to long term that we've got to keep focused on.
Well, I think just to, and this is an assumptive example, but I think it's, well, it's not so much assumption. I think we all know that, you know, if the value had been met for Højbjerg, he would have been gone in January. And I think there would have been a very real possibility that we might have been able to bring in a replacement, whether that was Conor Gallagher or not. That's for speculation. But, you know, these are the situations that Ange is having to deal with that I do think are coming to bite a little bit in general, because, you know, these are players that are not part of the long-term future, yet he's having to use them because of injuries and because of fatigue and because there's no other option. Yet what you're not seeing is the manager throwing them under the bus. He's stepping up and reminding people time and time again of what he's doing and what he's trying to do. And unfortunately, that's not satisfactory for people. They want people thrown under the bus, and they want blood, because that's the modern world. That's honestly how I see it.
But I think this is, we're probably getting away from actually, you know, the question here around how much of it is to do with him, and we're kind of going off into, you know, kind of what people want and stuff. But I think, you know, when we talk about the, you know, my most hated word in football, project, it's, you know, but you know,
which now means I must use it as often as possible, right?
I'll do a list for next season.
I'm being mischievous. Go on.
Progressive started creeping in again recently, which I think is meaningless.
Oh, very good. I do like that. Progressive passing over 15 yards. I've thrown that in, haven't I? Yeah.
But, well, no, that means something. But progressive football, I think, doesn't mean anything. I just think people think it sounds nice. And projects, I hate the terminology, because I don't really think that most managers get time. If Ange has a, you know, a poor first half of next season, then yeah, the pressure's going to be on. I think, you know, this is the reality of it. I think, you know, no one gets a 3-year contract, and you're going to get that 3-year, you know, see that 3 years through, no matter what the results are along the way. So I think it's kind of meaningless. But if we talk about kind of where he wants the squad to be after three summers, then obviously that's going to be very different to where we were after one summer, where we were after two summers. And that is going to be a progression. That is going to be a change over time. And it's just not possible to do all of that amount of change in one go. So, you know, we have to be patient with that. And I think one thing just to bear in mind, and I think this is a key difference from the last few managers we've had, the good thing about this is, even if it doesn't work out, the type of players that he needs, you know, young, athletic, technically proficient players, are going to work for any manager. So we're not looking at someone who wants to sign kind of 28, 29, 30-year-old players with, you know, bags of experience on high wages who, you know, suit a particular style. We're not talking about that. We're talking about players who've got a resale value, you know, good technically, can cover, you know, cover a lot of ground, are quick. You know, that's whoever we bring in next, whoever, you know, eventually replaces Ange, and I'm hoping that's a long way off, but whoever that is going to be able to make use of those. So that's, I think that's a bit of a key difference to what we've seen before. Hopefully this doesn't mean that we're in this constant round of rebuilds.
No, I think that we can all agree on that.
I mean, the other thing to remember with Ange, I mean, and this is, you know, we can reflect back on who else has been in charge of our club at some point, but I mean, we value him because he's someone like, you know, he's got good morals and he's a principled guy, isn't he, at the end of the day? And he's, you know, he take the other great thing, takes responsibility, he'll take things as much, you know, as he needs to when things are not going right. And there's no vagueness about him. He's a straight talker. You don't have to read between the lines. I mean, this is all, it's kind of smaller stuff, but it's healthy stuff in the sense of, it's less likely it will go wrong because for footballing reasons. It won't go wrong because right. of him, if you see what I mean. We shouldn't underestimate that, because there's plenty of managers that are just firebrands and just fly off the handle.
That's the point I was making when I said he doesn't throw players under the bus, and he won't do it because he does his business behind closed doors, because he believes in the sanctity of both the dressing room and the club. And I believe that, you know, strongly, and I think that's a vital ingredient. Yeah,
and like you said the other day, and I think he's got such a philosophy and such strength and belief in what he does that he's quite happily to fall on his sword if it doesn't go right further down the line. He's not going to kick up a massive storm and it all get really ugly and stuff like that.
Nothing annoys me more than when people, like at times of pressure, go on about, well, this is the Premier League. this is your, he's in the big leagues now. It doesn't work like it did in Japan. It's got all this rubbish that people throw. And our fans are getting jittery. And Ange is getting this widespread criticism for the first time. And I just, you know, I mean, it's certainly, you know, the honeymoon period is over. But, you know, our fans need to have more of a backbone, I think. Don't you? Or do they just not understand what he's doing? Are we back to what you said earlier, Milo, where people just revert to their comfort zone of like the days of Tommy Smith and, you know, and you know, kicking the shit out of Steve Archibald, or I should probably say actually kicking the shit out of Chris Jones and Jerry Armstrong, probably be a little more accurate.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that kind of rhetoric around that we saw when he was first appointed from sections of the fan base and some in the media was, you know, kind of the proper football man mentality. And yeah, some of that's crazy. Obviously, when you're getting good results and you're playing well, then that gets quiet. And then as results get worse, or, you know, you hit a bumpy patch, then those people start getting noisier again and start saying, well, I told you this, you know, this is what I always thought and what have you. And I think it's, fundamentally, I think it's wrong. I don't think that, you know, where he's managed before is relevant. Or I don't think the reason we're struggling at the moment is because he hasn't played in one of the, he hasn't managed in one of the top five leagues before. I think, well, as I said, you know, I think it's down to the squad. I think it's down to fitness. I think it's down to us not quite being as, you know, as far along that line as we'd like us to be. That's not true, actually. So as far as I think people thought we would be. And I think the mistake people make is they think there's a magic bullet. We're always looking for magic bullets. And I think maybe, you know, people are fooling themselves in the first, you know, 10 games that we'd cheated. You know, we'd always be told about the painful rebuild. And maybe people thought we'd cheated it and we could just jump straight through it and it was easy. And it's not easy.
That's the key point. These things, there is no cheat mode. There is no equivalent of a Van de Ven in these situations. You have to go through the pain, especially for what we had versus what where we're trying to go. And I think, obviously, it's such an important thing to re-emphasize.
And, you know, I think when people start talking about, yeah, Plan B or, you know, singling out, I think it's not so much singling out players. It, you know, the style and saying, oh, we, you know, that might work in the Scottish Premiership, it might work in the J League, but it's not going to work here. You need, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think quite often what people fall back on is the football of their youth or, you know, what they played when they were at school. And then they think that is kind of the blueprint for successful football. I think that's the problem that a lot of commentators have. I think, you know, we've seen this season where they just don't understand the roles that the players are being asked to perform, and then they're critical of that. And again, it's easy to be critical when the results aren't there. But and that's what's happening at the moment. You know, the results aren't there, so people are piping up.
It is true though. In sport, as you move through the levels, things by definition get more difficult, don't they? I mean, mm-hmm. We know that. I mean, realistically, it's tough to make it in professional sport, but it's near on impossible to make it at elite level professional sport, and hardly anyone does. And mm-hmm. That's why it's so, you know, it's nearly impossible. There's only so many great managers. And if Ange wants to be one of the great managers, he's going to have to hope that what he brings is good enough to work it in this league. And this league is the top league. So don't discount what people are saying. I can understand that as a logic thing, but it might be a logic trap, mightn't it, that you think that you're coming.
You know, I mean, but I think it's bent logic and I think it lacks context. I think you don't get to 60 points this season just not knowing what the fuck you're doing, which is what some of the insinuations are. Secondly, the context of our season has to be given. We suffered injuries and suspensions of a concentration that I think any other team, well, every other team that's had them, bar Liverpool, is below the table. So they're not doing as well.
To be honest.
What's that?
I'm not talking about this season. I'm just talking about overall. In the bigger picture,
well, I'm addressing Ange.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm addressing Ange and how far he can go. And it will be probably dictated to by what we've just said before, which is like squad members and having a good squad to do that, to carry out his plan. And it's not going to be for the want of trying, believe me. I mean, he's going to try absolutely everything. But it's just an interesting thing. I think loads of people in sport rise up and then all of a sudden, sometimes they do meet their they meet their level eventually. I'm not saying Angie's going to do that. I'm just saying it's a reality. I mean, there are boxers are like that, aren't they? They go up through the levels and they think they are the best place on earth, and then they
meet someone. I'm
trying
to save you from what I think will be an instant reaction to you, so to people saying, "Oh, well, you're just saying." And I know you're not saying that about Ange, you know, at all. I know you're saying in general in life, you know, there's a progression and you have to meet the marker. And I agree with that. And we will see what happens with Ange. But I think this season, because of the last four games, and let's face it, two of them have been awful. But I do think, you know, with I don't want a happy clap, but there have been some incredible achievements this season in terms of growth and in terms of structure and in terms of what we're trying to do and in terms of what we've managed to do with some of these players. We're just at the rough bit now where all of a sudden we realise, oh, there's a bit more fucking work to do than, you know, we at first thought. But it is where it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think the difference between the Premier League and, you know, the Scottish Premiership or, you know some of the J-League or wherever is that, you know, Premier League's got, well, at the moment, two very, very good clubs. And then it's got another, well, we're probably at the stage now where there's, what, another six after that? You'd say we're all pretty, you know, we're competitive and really challenging and, you know, are competing for, you know, two places. I mean, that's the difficulty with that. But I don't think that, the suggestion is that his tactics are naive for the Premier League. I don't think that's the case at all. I don't think that... you know, once they're properly enacted with the right players, that's the case. I think it's just that we're not quite there yet. And, you know, that's the painful bit, isn't it? It's trying to go through that and trying to still get results whilst you haven't quite got the tools you need for it. And most of these managers we're competing with here have either spent a fucking fortune or have been in post for a while. And, you know, if you look at, you know, Eddie Howe obviously spent quite a lot of money. You know, what is he now in his third? So, coming to the end of, two and a half seasons there. You know, we could go through all of them like this, couldn't we? But, you know, they've either spent a fortune, they've been there a while, and that's a challenge. You know, we're not in that position. So, and, you know, when you're saying about kind of do our fans need more backbone, I think, yes, I think, you know, we quite often hear fans complain about the mentality of the players. I think, you know, I think the mentality of the fans is just as much of an issue. If we all get the fucking wobbles every time we get a, you know, run of four bad results, then it's going to take a fucking long time to sort this out. And I think, you know, the bit of the question here that you dropped out, Steph, was, is this the end of Vibes FC? And I think it's a real shame that kind of togetherness and kind of sense of buy-in that we saw at the beginning of the season, we've lost, and people aren't prepared to kind of commit to something. Because I think that support actually makes the project a lot easier. I think, you know, people being transactional around, you know, I'll support you if we're getting good results, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like as soon as you go, you know, I pull away, then I think that makes the job even harder.
People hate Liverpool. I know this. I am not one of those people. I have always had great respect for them. But there is a club that have almost to a person unanimously backed every manager that's come in, however poorly they may have done. Even Roy Hodgson got a polite, if not, you know, overly rambunctious passage from the fans. And Klopp certainly didn't have it all his own way when he first came in. Mm. And everyone bought in, every single person who was associated with that football club, from the fan to the tea lady, bought into it. And I think that we need a little more of that fortitude at our club. But to your point, Ricky, I mean, yes, it's understandable. People will complain. I mean, I complained. I think we've all had a little moan here and there. So, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, you're right to say that, you know, complaints will happen, but surely that the end game has to be people taking a step back, understanding where we are, and really maybe reevaluating beyond their immediate emotions of a situation and not doomscaping for forevermore about Ange Postecoglou and Tottenham Hotspur right now. And I think also a lot of supporters need to recognise we had a damn good ride in a very short amount of time and probably overachieved under Poch. Mm-hmm. And I do think that we're still suffering the hangover of that. And I think that's another thing Ange is turning around at the club. I think there's a lot of work that he's doing that we don't even see and won't see for another season or two.
I mean, I know a lot of it's knee-jerk, but some people seem to speak with no kind of awareness of the consequences. In the sense, I don't mean what they're saying, but I mean, what are they actually saying in the sense? Are they suggesting some short-termism? Let's just like rip it up and start again. How many times are we going to go around that?
You mean like we did with Mourinho and Conte?
Yeah. Well, how many times are we going to go around that kind of circle? Exactly. I mean, I'm not quite sure how you build it. All the other clubs that have got somewhere have proven that you have to have the right guy. And if you feel he's the right guy, you need to just stick it out with someone and carry on. And I know they all get kind of like hyped up and wound up every week with various media channels and various whatever. But I think, I don't know, I think it's quite taxing, to be honest, from a football supporting point of view. And I just need to like, and I kind of like, have just detached myself from it slightly because I can't be, I just think, can't we have just all talked about it in the caff in the morning and then that would be it? You know what I mean? It's just like,
yeah.
And that talking about old man football, there's my life.
Yeah, yeah. But I think you're right. I think, you know, everyone's got to have their hot take, haven't they? Everyone's got to have their opinion. Yeah. And I think, you know, and Steph, we were talking on Thursday night after the Chelsea game, when we said on last week's pod that we might do a pod on Chelsea after Chelsea. And we, you know, we were messaging during the game, Steph, as to whether we did one or not. Yep. And I was like, I'm not so sure that actually, you know, anyone's going to particularly want to hear kind of yours and my brand of mindless optimism after that result. And we might just end up pissing people off. But, we had a chat about it, didn't we? And like, you know, we could hold this back and we could use it today. And we're probably going to say the same things today as we would have said on Thursday, but maybe, you know, people might be more open to hearing it today. But I think, you know, we've got this. I think there's quite a lot of other Spurs podcasts that probably should have had the same conversation because they hadn't got anything to say. And what they were doing is coming out and ranting. And I think, you know, I just don't think that's healthy. You know, there's just so much noise, as you're saying, Ricky, there's so much noise that everyone's got to have their take. Everyone's got to, you know, I've got to be first with my opinion. And, you know, this is going to be my hill to die on until the next one comes along and the next one comes along. But actually, you know, I don't know. Sometimes you just got to think, have I got anything to say? No, I haven't got anything to say. Well, I'll shut up then and I'll save it for when I do. But I don't think there's enough of that.
Yeah, which is definitely, you know, it plays back into a pod we had a few weeks ago where we were talking about how we watch football and how things have changed indeed for consuming football. And there is so much more. And a game is more than a game. And to your point about chatting in the cafe, Ricky, I mean, look, that's what people used to do. And that life has changed a lot, hasn't it, in that sense? Well, everyone has to have a say about everything, and football is part of that. But by God, maybe Tottenham Hotspur supporters should take a step back and remember that life is populating that kind of mindless chuntering every five seconds and take a breath and see the bigger picture. Be mindful of it.
I think what's happened is because you could be in a social club and you talk about football and there will always be someone in there with a really like stupid opinion and ranting and raving and that kind of thing. There will always be a couple of people like that. But
all those couple of people
have got smartphones. They've all got smartphones, those people. You know what I mean?
You're right. Sorry, obviously. And now they what?
I said, and now they work for The Athletic or The Guardian.
Yeah, no, it's true. So I think, look, I mean, just to couch this for people listening, look, I think everyone sympathises with on-the-spot emotions. Nobody likes to sit and watch you go 2-0 down at Chelsea, going 4-0 down at Anfield. These are not fun things. Nobody likes to watch us go through. Nobody likes that. But once you get past the initial emotions, perhaps take a check and make sure that you can see the bigger picture. That would be, I think, hopefully what people are taking from this segment of the conversation. Nobody's happy. You know, we all have our ideas of who should be playing better and who shouldn't, but there is a bigger picture here. And thank God it's being painted out for us very clearly and very definitively. And as you said, I believe, Ricky, at the beginning of this whole section, one of the greatest things about Andrew is he is absolutely definitive in what he is doing and he's not going to waver. So there you have it. Buy in or don't, but it ain't going to change. So we had those fight backs against, today at Anfield. We had them against Arsenal last weekend. Let's touch on that a little bit. And let's just, you know, closing this out, look at what, if anything, we should be changing for our remaining games. And the first person to say marking up at set pieces will be banned from the Games About Glory. That was an attempt at a shit joke. It was shit that everyone's looking at me like you really have dropped the worst comment.
The fight backs, I mean, it does go to, I mean, the fight backs almost come, I mean, you could, like we've argued before, it could be that when the other team's 3-0, 4-0 up, they're kind of enjoying themselves and they get a little bit slack. But what it does, I think, show is, well, I think today the subs really showed that Richie really helped. And even Sonny came to life. I mean, I know he was trying to take his man on and he was looking sharp and that. And And I think what it shows is when we got that odd goal, it almost injected us with the enthusiasm, which is the reverse of when we concede a goal sometimes and it kind of drains out of us. So it shows how that kind of ebbs and flows there. And although realistically you're not going to probably get fully back into the game, although we had some more chances even when we'd scored two today where it could have got, it's almost a bit like a repeat to the game you went to last year, really. It could have got to that stage, couldn't it, Steph, at Anfield? But so it's good to see that. I'm not saying, I wouldn't put too much, wouldn't invest too much currency in that, but I think at least they're not going 5-6-7-0 where sometimes you think, something like that is a real hammer blow sometimes, and it can venture the fans off into all kinds of other directions as well if, you know, something's too much of a heavy defeat. So yeah, and it shows the people coming on have got enthusiasm as well, even if they're standing there at the touchline, because I think Richarlison was standing there when Elliot scored, I think, wasn't it, and he must have thought, well, that's another goal, but at least he came on and still gave us everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can take something from it. I think it shows that the spirit in the squad is there, which is something that, again, I'm seeing questioned in some parts of the, you know, the fan base. And I think today, you know, it shows that, I think, when we get our more, you know, kind of technical players on, there's, you know, we can create stuff, we can create opportunities. So yeah, and whether we take anything from for the rest of the season, I mean, we've got a week off now. You know, we've had three games in a week this week, which is, two London derbies and Liverpool. You wouldn't be surprised if they're all kind of dead on their feet after that. So we've got a week off. Hopefully that means that, you know, our best players are ready to start next weekend. And, you know, it's looking like a, you know, really important game, isn't it, against Burnley? Because, you know, we've got to pick up some points because the teams behind us are picking them up and we haven't. So, kind of cement that fifth position, I suppose. And I think the only other thing I'd say about taking from the remaining games, when we talked about Emerson Royal already, I think, you know, Skip probably deserves to start against Burnley. And that's, again, it is a good chance. You'd want that rather than starting him there against City, wouldn't you? Because I think, you know, they could make any fullback look foolish when they're on form. So, yeah, I think, I think we've got to do that. And I think the only other thing to bear in mind is just that, you know, this is the first chapter. Hopefully there's many more. There's a lot more work to do, and you know, maybe just not react to every game quite so much, and try and look at that kind of mid to long term picture more, and just remember that it's nearly over. It's nearly over this season.
I think one thing as well, and, you know, I know we don't like to look back too much, but we should remember that if I Poch went through some really shaky phases in his first season and a half, where there were some, you know, thumpings here and there. And it is rough when you're trying to work things out. And people would do well to remember that. I think we've hammered that point on the pod probably enough, so I won't hammer it anymore. I will tell you today, I was really happy to see Maddison's approach when he came on. I thought, you know, he really looked like he wanted to try and make something happen. And, you know, forget about the fact Liverpool 4-0 up. You look at the intent of the player, don't you, when they come on? Are they coming on to fill space in a game where the team's 4-0 down, or are they coming on thinking, I can affect this, I can make a difference? And I felt he really looked like he had the bit between his teeth when he came on, and I was happy to see him do stuff. I was happy to see him try some stuff. Felt like maybe it's the first shadow of the old Maddison for the first time in a few weeks, which was really good. Mm. I agree with you. I thought Richie looked really good. I mean, I thought actually the last 20 minutes, I thought we looked fairly decent again. So you'd like to say that, you know, if we do make that change, which I agree with you, Milo, that Skippy maybe coming in there for Royale, you know, we might see next weekend might be a return to, you know, to fun and vibes FC.
I don't think a win against Burnley is going to see the return of Vibes FC, but but I think it
take
does
anything.
Show. I think it does show that part of the issue is confidence. If you look at Sonny, once Richard scored, he looked like a different player. Johnson perked up a lot more as well. So yeah, I do think that we should take some heart from that in that it does look to be a confidence issue rather than a shit players issue.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that, because where we finished this year was kind of like didn't really matter too much. I mean, it was not long ago we was in the race for fourth, but we had the old we had the backstop of fifth. Basically, it looked like we was guaranteed fifth, didn't it? You know, no matter what happened, kind of thing. So I'm just hoping it'd be interesting when we play Burnley and Sheffield United, because we've had a tough run of games against some tough opponents. And I'm not saying they won't be tough, but I mean, you know, they've had some terrible results themselves. So hopefully 6 points there means we will finish fifth. And I kind of really want to finish fifth. I want Europe next year.
I hope you've all got something from this conversation beyond the ones that you've been having with your friends. And hopefully you're bought in. And I do think this requires a buy-in. I think that's what you're hearing from all of us. No one's happy about this stage of the journey. But I mean, you know, you take you take a long train journey anywhere and tell me the landscape outside's always beautiful, and I'll call you a fucking liar. So with one of my metaphors thrown in there at the end.
Oh, real treat. real treat for the people who made it this far, wasn't it? Shall I move on to the week that was?
That was an excellent metaphor. What are you talking about?
We heard the sad news this week that former Spurs and Wales winger Terry Medwin had passed away at the age of 91. Terry was part of the 61 double-winning team, won the FA Cup with us the following season. He played 30 times for Wales and scored the winning goal in the 2-1 win against Hungary in the 1950 World Cup in Sweden. Terry joined Spurs from Swansea Town for £25,000 in 1956 and stayed with us until he suffered a broken leg playing for us on a tour of South Africa in 1963, which ended his career. After retiring as a player, he coached at Fulham and was assistant manager to John Toshack at Swansea during the club's climb from the old fourth division to the first division in the late 70s and the early 80s. So rest in peace, Terry.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And finally, Sports Business have reported that BetMGM is set to take over as our training kit sponsor from next season. The online betting operator will replace the financially troubled Getter in a multi-year deal. I don't know about you fellas, but I'm not too keen on having a betting company as a sponsor.
Absolutely not. Does not fit what I think is a good thing to be doing.
Yeah, I think we should swerve things like that, to be honest. Especially there's a big association with football and betting, and we don't really need to be encouraging that regardless of you know, what we're getting in money-wise from that, because I'm sure there's other people we could quite happily snag as a sponsor for that kind of thing.
So, not that they're going to listen to us, but yeah, this kind of on top of the kind of crypto stuff that we've got involved in this season just leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. We're all in agreement there. Thanks, chaps. It was good to talk it through, I think. As you said, Milo, probably good that we did not do the emergency pod that we were planning after the Chelsea game. It's good to do it this time. Next up is Burnley. It's our last weekend home game of the season. We'll be back next Sunday to talk about that and everything else that has happened in N17.
I'm going? Yeah, so I was going to say earlier on, so kind of taking positives from it, but basically after the Chelsea game when you were trying to phone me and everyone else having a meltdown, I went onto the ticket exchange and picked up some tickets for taking my stepdad to it. So he's managed to miss most of the games this season, so it'll be the first time he's been along. So everyone having a meltdown and flogging their tickets allowed me to take him to his first game of the season, so I'm pleased about
very
that.
Very good.
So Vibes FC will return.
Led by.
Yeah.
Where in the ground are you going to be sitting?
North Upper this time, so it's not my preferred part of the ground, but I mean, you know.
North Upper. So the bloke you see trying to lead the singing in the North Upper and generally being over emotional, now you know who it is. Now you know who it's going to be. So it'll be our very own Milo leading Vibes FC.
I hope I'll be dancing to Freed from Desire at the end.
I might put a request in that they actually make the victory song Derude Sandstorm just to challenge you.
I'll be out the door.
All right. Well, thanks. And let's hope. I hope for a win always, but I especially hope for a win knowing that you and family are going to be in the ground. That's it.
That's it. Bye.
Just
see ya.